today on the Mike O'Mara Show.
My wonderful wife walked in. She goes, "What are you watching?" I said, "The RNC." And she said, "Man, who is that?" And I said, "Oh, that's Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend. She used to be on Fox, if I'm not mistaken."
Yeah. And she was married to the governor of California, too.
Yeah, so she said...
Or girlfriend.
I'm she sure said, "Man," I was like, "She doesn't have to yell, and she's too old to have a center part." And a center part for those...
Oh, for the hair.
Yes. I like when youth is around. I don't like when, like,
sure, it's like St. Elmo's fire. It's great.
Yes. And the first thing Shannon says, "I see the neighbors moved in." I'm like, "Yeah, they were lifting weights in the garage playing Biggie and Tupac." And she said, "Like full blast?" I'm like, "Yeah." I was like, "Finally, some life in this neighborhood." And she said, "Were they wearing masks?" I said, "No chance."
All that and more. The Mike O'Mara Show starts now. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Today's episode of the Mike O'Mara Show is brought to you by our bonus packages. Please go to MikeO'MaraShow.com and click on the bonus banner. You'll get access to all of our bonus content, and even better, you'll be helping out TMOS. So please, quit sucking, and we thank you.
Available on demand every day in iTunes and the Google Play Store, and around the world on MikeO'MaraShow.com. What more can we do for you? It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Welcome to the Mike O'Mara Show. People ask me what really thrills me in my career, and what really gets me excited is when I get an opportunity to have a great writer on the show and someone who's written some wonderful stuff. We are so, so thrilled to have on the Mike O'Mara Show a lady who has written two books that I've spent the summer with. One is her New York Times bestseller, number one bestseller, The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and then the sequel to that book, which is... Silke's Journey, which is a follow-up to The Tattooist of Auschwitz. Her brand-new book is Stories of Hope. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but please welcome. It's really an honor to have you on the show. Heather Morris, all the way from Australia. She's from Down Under. She's from Down Under. Heather, thanks so much for coming on the show. We appreciate it.
Oh, look, my pleasure. Delighted to be chatting to you guys.
I can't even tell you how... I came across this. I think it was just randomly in the bookstore. It's on a bestseller list, and I picked up The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and that was it. I tore through both of these books because they are so compelling, and I'm telling you something you already know because you've gotten such amazing reviews on them. How did your journey with these two phenomenal books begin? The way I understand it is you actually met Lali Sokolov, and he had a story to tell. How did that come about? I'm curious because he is the tattooist of Auschwitz, and I'm just fascinated by the whole process of how you did this work.
Yeah, look, thank you. And look, it's a little bit of a lesson that if you have no good reason to say no to being asked to do something, that then say yes, do it. Because I'd been putting off meeting a friend who I hadn't seen for many months. I live outside of Melbourne a little bit, and on the weekends it was a bit of a hassle to go in and meet her. And then finally I did. Now on a Sunday afternoon, sitting in a cafe, she just casually said to me, "Oh, by the way, I have a friend whose mother has just died. His father has asked him to find somebody he can tell a story to. That person can't be Jewish. You're not Jewish. Do you want to meet him?" And I said, "What's the story?" And she said, "Oh, I have no idea." "Oh, okay, never mind. Yes, I'll meet him." And a week later, I knocked on the apartment door of Lali Sokolov. And that began this incredible journey.
Incredible, and it is an incredible journey. Lali Sokolov was I think that many of us, even as old as I am, when I've read about the Holocaust, you think that the individuals that would have been putting tattoos on people when they went to the concentration camps would have been the guards, the members of the party, the people of the SS that were in there, but they farmed out prisoners for so many of these jobs. And the fact that he was the one that was doing this work initially kept him alive, and because it was all about who had a purpose for the horrible regime there. When you're researching a story like this, because obviously you get the interview with Lali. And then you go on to research, and then you create a novel out of this. It is not a biography. It is more of a historical novel. How do you do that? Because you take facts and then you have to tell the story. And did you have experience? You were a screenwriter, right? You did that. That's what you were doing before.
Oh, yeah. Look, I had studied and gone to a few workshops and seminars because I wanted to write screenplays. I was going to write the next Gone with the Wind. But I'd never written anything. And the screenplays I'd written, the two or three, they're still sitting in the bottom drawer of my desk. But in terms of, can I say I actually never interviewed Lally. I never considered I interviewed him. He was 87 years of age, grieving terribly when I met him. He couldn't tell a coherent story if he tried. And the first time I met him, he just sat with his head down, shaking it and saying, "You hurry up and write down what I'm telling you because I need to be with Geeta, his wife."
So he's getting ready to die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I knew from my work in a social work department at a hospital that if you're listening to somebody, truly listening to them, you cannot write notes. You cannot even have a recorder with you because it's a distraction, particularly to elderly people. So I sat there with him and listened to him and then raced home and would try and copy it. And I did that 2 to 3 times a week for several months. Now, Lally was telling me these amazing stories, but from a very factual, clinical standpoint. And he'd start to say something and then he'd stop and pull back. And I knew that something was holding him back. And of course, I realized he didn't really know me. Why should he sort of unburden all these incredibly emotional and painful memories? So I actually took him home. I brought him home to meet my family. I had a husband and 3 young adult children. And on that very first visit to my family, I found the bugger flirting with my then 18-year-old daughter. And from that moment, I realized that this was a man that what I'm now seeing was the true Lally. He was so charismatic and full of life, and it started to come back. And as that came back, he started actually really telling me the deeply emotional stories to his life. And, oh, you know, there were times I sat with him and he just wept. And he did relive the horror and the evil that he'd witnessed and been part of. But, yeah, then it comes to that whole, how do you tell a story? Well, here's the thing. I spent quite a bit of time doing research myself and getting professional researchers in Europe to, well, verify what he was telling me. And they were able to verify many of the facts. I've got amazing documents that have his name and his number written on them, showing what he was doing in Auschwitz-Birkenau and being imprisoned there, being imprisoned in a prison. It's weird. But then it got to the point where I had to make a decision. What story am I telling? And I woke up one morning and I just said, oh, you know, sod it. I'm not telling the story of the Holocaust. I'm just telling a Holocaust story. It's Lally's. And that totally freed me up to write it the way I did. And even though the publishers, when they came on board, said, oh, it's a memoir. And I went, uh-uh. I went to memoir school for a day. It was a 5-day course. And I knew I could not tell his story that way. So I took the screenplay that I had written and I adapted that, which is why there's a lot of dialogue in it. And I've been told it still reads a little bit like a screenplay in places, but yeah, who cares?
And then the challenge of the next book, Silke's Journey, was someone who Lally had met in the concentration camp. And you follow her story, which is you never got a chance because she had passed away to interview her. And was that a more of a challenge, not being able to speak to the principal character in the book, or was it less of a challenge because you could make it more like a novel?
Oh, probably a bit of both. Lally begged me to tell her story after I'd written his, and he'd wag his finger and say, only after you've written mine, because she was the reason he and I were sitting together and the reason that he and I had this amazing friendship for 3 years. I was with him 2 hours before he died, knowing he would not see the sun come up the next day. And so I was trying to honour that promise I'd made to him many times. Now, I knew that Silke had survived being in a gulag in Siberia, for 10 years.
After a concentration camp, by the way, for people that don't.
Yeah, that's where Silke, she was in Auschwitz for nearly 3 years, And then she was taken straight away to a Siberian gulag for 10 years. Because Geeta had visited her. Lani told me that Geeta and Silke had maintained a communication and a friendship over all those decades. And Geeta had visited her in Slovakia. So once again, well, get the professional researchers in Moscow to find me everything they could about Vorkuta Gulag. And only Vorkuta Gulag. I wanted to know about no others. That was the name of the gulag she was in. And then after that, I started going to Slovakia, where I have many friends now, because both these people, Lali and Silke, come from there. And I got to then meet her neighbors and her friends and sit in the very apartment she'd lived in for four decades. And from her friends and neighbors who'd known her for 40, 50 years, they told me all the bits of her story.
Wow. I mean, and what a story it is. I can't even begin to tell you. I use the term required reading, and I think this ought to be in schools for kids to read the, because it's so, you personalize it so beautifully when you do that. When you do your research for talking to people about this horrible time in our history, and I think as we all get older, I'm 61 years old, and I always worry that as we all get older that the memories fade for mm-hmm. everybody, and to keep it, you hear the term never forget. I was in Germany years and years and years and years and years ago, and I detected a sense of people are reluctant to talk about this time in history. When you're doing your research for this, and on both sides, on the German side, on the Nazi side, on the survivor side, did you find that to be the case when you were researching either one of these books, that people are reluctant, even all these years down the road, to talk about the Holocaust and the horrors of what went on in the camp, and maybe the gulag as well?
Oh, look, absolutely. But more and more are now opening up, particularly the older, the actual survivors. They are now finding that there's maybe some peace in talking about their stories. And I've been privileged to meet hundreds of survivors everywhere from Australia to the US to South Africa, throughout Europe. And a lot of them don't open up to their family. And their families say to me, you know, my mother and my grandmother won't talk to me about her time. And I kind of look at her and go, yeah, of course she won't. Why should she? You're her family. God, I'm a mum. You think I could look in the eyes of my children and tell them of those kind of horrors? It's mm-hmm. not going to happen. And I've suggested to many, and many have taken me up on it, and they write and tell me how successful they are. I say, get a stranger and see if your family member will talk to them, somebody they're not emotionally connected to.
Wow.
But and so by doing it that way, you're kind of removed. Yeah, with Lully, we went beyond my just being someone to record his story, because he became part of my life. And, you know, when he decided to reconnect with the Jewish community in Melbourne about 6 months after Geeta died, he started taking me out. He said to my husband, can I have your wife? I need to take her out. And we would go out to a big gatherings, little gatherings, 20 people, 200 people. And he would always just stand there and point to me and go, "Is she my girlfriend? Ladies, you look after her. I pick her up on the way out." And yeah, that was the relationship I had with him.
We're talking to Heather Morris, three books, actually. Her new book is Stories of Hope, a nonfiction work, but the stories that I wanted to get her on this show, The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and also Silke's story. Just amazing, amazing pieces of literature that I think everybody should read if they get a chance. Just to give our listeners who may not have read the books an overview very, very briefly, The Tattooist of Auschwitz, basically a love story of two people that find each other in this horrific environment of Auschwitz-Birkenau. And then the sequel to that story, Silke's Journey, which just blew me away even more, the idea of being liberated from a death camp, and the Russians come in, determined that she collaborated with the accuser of collaborating with the enemy, and sentence her to 15 years in a gulag north of the Arctic Circle, by the way, which is stunning. That fact alone in Silke's Journey, the sequel to Tattooist of Auschwitz, that fact alone, I would think that would break anyone. You would be done. That would. But when you heard those words, you've survived this horrible Auschwitz experience, and then the Russians come in, and because you were basically raped by the commandant of the camp. You are accused by other prisoners of collaborating because you had it better. If you could, if anybody could have it better in that regard, that's just a stunning story. But she did survive it. I wanted to ask you about the blowback on Silke's journey, because when you write an historical novel like this, there was blowback. Do you think that's because of the sexual element of this, where some people, some organizations were saying, "Oh, it didn't really happen. That could never have happened." How does anyone know what could have happened in those horrific camps right there? Do you get the sense that because of that sexual component, that people were more apt to throw darts at you about saying that couldn't have happened, that didn't happen, including a stepson, Silke's stepson, I think, was that because of that, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. And that actually makes me all the more fired up, because the more we read, and we've got a lot of research into female Holocaust survivors who are now in their 90s, and because of dementia, have lost the ability to filter what they're saying. And they're now doing studies into these beautiful old ladies who are shocking and horrifying their families and their carers, because they are now coming out and talking about the sexual abuse and rape that they endured, because they've lost the filter. And when we looked further at why the historians and the academics have chosen to, ignore it, they totally ignore it, and now they're being questioned why. And their rationale is, we didn't want that to detract from what we saw as the picture of the Holocaust, or the narrative of the Holocaust, which is that 6 million Jewish people died. And and when you dig further, they go into the whole, but if we talk about it, then we might shame these ladies. And I go, it's our shame that we have allowed them to live for decades. Wow. Not theirs. So I get a bit crusady about it, because I'm fed up with hearing people throw phrases at me like, they were comfort women, or just spoils of war. They're the phrases we use to describe girls and women being raped in war and conflict, and that kind of gets me more than a little bit antsy.
It's sexist. It's still the sexism. Horrible. And I'm so glad that you're willing to talk about that, because of course something like that would happen, and people still are sexist where they want to say, that blows me. I did not know that people want to do that. How do you think people like Lolly and Silke, what is it? What do they have, based on your interviews with people who knew Silke and your personal experience with Lolly, what is the chip that gets you through that, when most of us would just curl up into a ball and let me just die, let me get rid. What is it the desire to survive? What gives them that strength to endure? I'm amazed at that.
Look, just before I answer that, can I say I was doing a tour in Auschwitz, and it was a private tour because I was there with a film crew from Spain, I think, and we had one of the head sort of tour people with us, and it was just the film crew and me. And at one point, the film crew was setting up for more shots, and the guy that was with us said to me on the quiet, he said, "See that building over there?" And I went, "Yeah." He said, "That was the brothel they had here in Auschwitz." So for anyone who wants to say to me there was no sexual assault or rape because Hitler had decided that it was against the rules, and then they go and build a brothel. Come on. Right. Anyway, so we can move on from that.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Talking about their survival, Lolly was a 26-year-old man, educated, worldly. And so comparing him then to this young girl, 16, who was from a small town. I know it's
still
small.
She was 16 when she went to the camp.
Mm-hmm. Just 16. And for the two of them to survive, it's quite different, their backgrounds, but they both did. Now, for Lolly, it was, I have got to survive this place so that I can tell the world what happened here. That's how he carried himself through that whole time. Plus, he was what you'd probably call an opportunist, let's face it. He said that about himself. He looked for opportunities. He stayed alert, never took a step anywhere without looking around to see where the dangers were. He still got into trouble, but, that's Lolly. Mm-hmm. Whereas Silke, she apparently, from what we understood, she wanted to survive Auschwitz because she wanted to know what had happened to her family. Now, you've read the book, Mike, and so you know what happened to her mom. No. Can I tell you that that's true?
Oh, unbelievable.
That happened. I did not, I mean, and I would no way would I create anything like that. But from what I can understand, her survival of the Gulag, the difference between those two places, when they were taken to Auschwitz-Birkenau, they had no idea what they were there for and for how long. Apparently, Silke clung to the notion that I have been sentenced to 15 years. So there is, if I can just stay alive for 15 years, I will get out.
Wow.
She got out 5 years early. That's because that, I won't use the word I was going to use, that so-and-so Stalin finally did the right thing by humanity and died. And Khrushchev came to power and he decided to release some of the, well, the prisoners that were in the gulags from other countries.
We appreciate you coming on, and I know we only have a few more minutes here that I wanted to just ask you. And I'm not sure whether you know about that. What is the state of the prison situation, gulags, whatever? Do these exist still in Russia? Do they still have this type of outpost in certain rural areas? It was, by the way, the gulag that Silke was sentenced to was north of the Arctic Circle. And and you know, the referencing her mom going through that, being literally carrying her mom. Oh, I can't even imagine. What's the state of the prison system in Russia now? Do places like this still exist on any level?
Well, Vorkuta still is. It's still a working coal mine. And the people who now live there are the people who were imprisoned there. And now they had nowhere to go because once they shut down the imprisonment side of it, they just still needed the coal. Those people had nowhere to go because it is so far away from anywhere. My understanding, and look, one of the first people or first countries outside of America and the UK to buy the rights for Silke's story was, in fact, Russia.
Wow.
And get to the Russian, had my people in London say to the Russian publishers, are you sure you want to publish this? Because I haven't got anything nice to say about Russians. And yet the word that's come back on the quiet to me is it's about time the West got, you know, the gulags got exposed for what they are.
Okay.
Now, they've been written about academically, but trying to find, other than like Solzhenitsyn, those individual stories of survival there, well, Silke's fits very nicely into, look, maybe they're using me for propaganda for all I know. I don't know. But, I did about a 40-minute interview on live Ukraine television last Thursday.
Wow. Unbelievable. A better, obviously, a better situation for being liberated by the Americans or the Western folks than the Red Army, I would take it, during the liberations of these camps, correct? It was a little rougher for the people that were liberated, just the way they were treated, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, why couldn't the Americans have got to Auschwitz first? It just would have made such a difference because those camps like Bergen-Belsen and Mauthausen that they did get to, the people there, of course, were liberated, and in many instances, I believe many of them went to the States as a result of being liberated by the American Army.
Last couple of questions here. Stories of Hope, that is a work of nonfiction. What can you tell us about that? I have not read that book.
No, you haven't. Here's the cover.
Okay.
And it's coming out in the UK in a couple of weeks' time and in Australia in about 4 weeks. So many people have written to me since these books come out from around the world. And they tell me the most amazing stories of hope they have got from having read Lully and Silke's stories. I'm talking the most incredible stories of being helped during really, really tough times in their lives. Because of one letter from a warden in a prison in South London, I have spent 3 hours in a maximum security prison in London with 100 prisoners, just trying to help them with their hope of having a better life when they get out. Young drug, in fact, my drink bottle here is from a drug use center in New York, having spent time with them. And because of these incredible letters and contact I now have with people, my publisher said, well, we'll see if you can write stories about what hope can do for anybody with your stories. And I share more about my time with Lully, like I have with you. So you get to learn a lot more about him and about Silke, my travels to Slovakia. And yeah, a little bit about me. I have to be a little bit vulnerable here and fess up to who I am, which it's not an easy thing for me, but I've done it.
Wow. And what would you tell a 16-year-old in America that knows nothing about the Holocaust, why you should be aware of it, why you should, what would you say to them about the Holocaust that would make them aware of what they need to know?
Well, maybe we'll start with saying to your education departments, like we have here in Australia, it's actually on the curriculum for secondary schools here. So children as young as 14 now are having to read it in schools all around Australia and the UK and New Zealand. They need to know what happened there. And while you can learn it from the big picture, because that's what you'll probably get taught in schools if you're taught anything, you'll hear about 6 million Jewish people being killed, 1.5 million in Auschwitz. But you will not be able to relate to 6 million. That number is too big. But if you read about Lully or you read any of the other stories, and apparently I've spawned this whole genre of Holocaust called Holocaust stories, read them, you will understand that this is something that you must always say never again and never forget. And you will. And by having a love story thrown in the mix, I mean, hey, how lucky am I?
Wow. You're a special lady, and you've done some amazing things here. And I'm so lucky to have had you on the show. And keep doing what you're doing. I can't wait to read Stories of Hope and Stories of Hope, The Tattooist of Auschwitz, Silke's Journey. Heather Morris, thanks for staying up late down there. It's the end of our summer here. And thank you for staying up a little late with us to come on the show. I wish you continued success and keep writing lots of stuff. I really hope you do. It's an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much, and good luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you. My
there
pleasure.
She goes. That's wonderful. That's Heather Morris, everyone. And wow, we can start the show now, Rob Spiewak. Absolutely.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show. You can listen to the Mike O'Mara Show at www.mikeomarashow.com.
Stay tuned for an outstanding entertainment program.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
Let's get down to business.
From the entertainment capital of the world.
Welcome to the Identity Processing Program of America. Please insert your forearm into the forearm receptacle. Thank you. Please speak your name as it appears on your current federal identity card. Document number G24L8.
Well, I'm not sure if
you have entered the name Not Sure. Is this correct? Not sure.
No, it's not correct.
Thank you. Not is correct. Is sure correct?
No, it's not. My name is
already
Joe.
Already confirmed. Your first name is Not. Please confirm your last name. Sure.
My last name is Not Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
No, what I mean is
sure.
my name is Joe.
Confirmation is complete. Please wait while I tattoo your new identity on your arm.
For the last time, I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
The Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look, the plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
It's what they use to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
It's the Mike O'Mara Show. Mike O'Mara, Rob Spiewak, Oscar Santana. And now, from his easy chair, here's Mike.
Oh, Brondo.
Is yet to come.
We are live from the Podcast Village Studios.
My God, my God.
The show has just started, and
the best is yet to come.
She seems nice.
Thank you. You gave me that this morning. Thank you. We are live for the Podcast Village Studios in the nation's capital. Heard everywhere. Gastonia, North Carolina. Salina, Kansas. Canterbury Village in Warrenton, Virginia. That's a neighborhood. in down there, right? That's a tiny, teeny little neighborhood.
You know what it is,
Warrington.
Mike? It's a hamlet.
It's a hamlet.
Yes.
It's a little, probably a little piece of stone in front of it.
Tiny.
Canterbury.
Yeah. That's it.
Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, Hampton Township, Pennsylvania, and Bangui in Central African Republic. The Mike O'Mara Show is on now and brought to you by our friends at Cornerstone. Another testimonial in my hot little hand about Cornerstone people. Let me read this one to you. This comes to us from Donna Havel. Short and sweet. My son lives in Panama City, Florida. He just completed a refi with Cornerstone. He said it was a great experience and very easy, and he's saving a lot of cash. Highly recommended. There you go. Thank you,
Donna. What more do you need? That's it.
To the point. Cornerstone, their low rate guarantee and the fact that they're both a lender and a broker allows them to have the flexibility to approve loans that the big banks can't. Interest rates in the 30-year fixed have fallen into the twos for the first time ever. You need to call my friend Mark Livingstone at Cornerstone First Financial now.
When?
Now.
Right now.
202-625-1221. 202-625-1221 or online at cornerstonefirst.com. Think of this, at this level, you'll likely never need to refinance again. So whether it's a purchase or refi, 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com. Cornerstone First Financial. Personal attention from application to closing. And thanks to Heather Morris. That's a great get, Rob, to have her on the show. And everybody should read those books.
What a fantastic interview.
Charming lady.
So much
She's
fun
so
to
nice.
Talk to her. Just, it's such an honor to be able to do this first thing on a Tuesday morning. Speak to somebody at 9 o'clock
worldwide.
In Australia, 9 p.m. Just really
How crazy is it? She's
amazing.
On another continent and we're just looking at her. I thought about that when
and
I was setting up the Zoom
perfect.
Call. Yeah.
She was, these books, you're not going to be able to put them down. I mean, I'm talking about from the first sentence on. And I think really, when I said that about kids, I think kids need to be aware. And if you're throwing that, as she said, that textbook numbers, statistics, it's same thing with COVID. When you're talking about north of 170,000, you don't think of that as human beings.
No.
When you take one story, though, and you personalize it, it becomes real.
People care about COVID. People care about COVID when they know someone who has it. That's when it becomes real, I think.
With that horror, I still have trouble getting my head around it. Mm-hmm. I can't totally intellectualize how on that scale that happened. But I guess when you're talking about, once again, little individual stories where somebody goes along, throw in a sadist, somebody goes along. Anyway, Tattooist of Auschwitz and Silke's Journey. Imagine, if you will, I think she was 3 years in a concert. Yeah, 3 years. Three years. Not hardly anybody lasted 3 years, much less 6 months, much less 2 months in a concentration camp. You are finally liberated. And the Russians sit you down before one of their little committees at the camp and say, you're sentenced to 15 years of the gulag. So you go from one to the other. I don't know how anyone could go through that. She did. People are amazing. People that survive these horrible human beings, and putting people in cages is horrible on any level. But anyway, that's that. So check that out. I was glad to have her on the show.
We should mention that Silke's Journey is out in paperback on September 8th, and you can get that at the TMOS Shopping Center. And all these books should be required reading. Thank you, Mike.
Well, we are, you'll notice I'm a little dressed like a mover today because we are beating feet out of here, getting things at the last minute.
Right.
It's the great migration is happening. And I will be making my first trip in 35 years to the nation's capital tomorrow. I couldn't be more excited.
Can't wait to see
excited
you.
Excited to have you, Mike.
Yes.
Look forward to that. Well, I'm not going to see you. You'll be in Leesburg.
Well,
I'll see you the same way I always see you. But
it'll be nice to see you in a different setting. I mean, it'll be exciting to have you there.
I understand Podcast Village, since I've been gone, they painted the whole thing purple.
Yep. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. No, it's blue. It's actually blue.
It's blue.
It's blue.
I'm looking for it. Can I bring my little...
Of course.
Because I don't have... My son has never had the thrill... Of walking into daddy's office.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's kind of it's not really my office.
Yes.
It's more like your office.
Oh,
but it's ours, Mike.
It's
daddy's
ours.
Office is the living room, isn't it? Daddy's office is next to his practice piano.
Mr. Hand, it's our time.
Or daddy's office is the bedroom up here, you know?
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah. So
when he walks in, he can push any of the buttons, but then when he walks into M,
Yeah,
he's gonna be blown
away. Are we gonna take him to M too?
Oh, absolutely.
Are we gonna
I gotta give you the M? Tour.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I hope I have time for him. But anyway, the reality is reality. That's the way it goes. And Oscar and I are getting together for drinky poos on Wednesday night when I get down there.
Yes,
maybe cool. Dinner, maybe drinks, depending on the time factor. I am assuming
Mike,
that
it
I'm
might
going
be
to
tricky.
Stop. Had a lovely evening with the family.
Had a lovely.
Don't you do that to me. Had a lovely evening with the family last night.
That is messed up. He's about to leave town. Get out nice and clean.
Everything's peace. My goal, Mr. Man, is to leave peaceful, and I did.
Good.
Fantastic.
That's fantastic. Good.
I had
perfect.
A great time.
Still
with
have
that.
12
my,
hours.
My angst comes out of desire to spend more time with my sister's family. And last night I got to do it. And I will tell you something. My nephew's little one, Charlotte, he's got another one on the way, another one in the oven, so he's going to have three kids. But his middle child now, Charlotte, who I have not spent a lot of time with, oh, my God, you're familiar, all of you, with the Donald Duck sneeze.
Oh, love it.
Of course.
Never in the history of the Donald Duck sneeze has there been a better reaction. We're talking the you know when the kids you know when the kids do that,
they die.
And I just kept doing it, and I'll do it. By the way, I'm three myself. I'll do it until she's done or a parent takes her away. When the by the way, the parents get bored and the adults get bored within 30 seconds.
Of course.
I don't care. I'm not playing to the parents. I'm playing to the kid. And it's like...
Up until Charlotte, the biggest reaction... The biggest reaction was always Oscar.
Yeah,
Oscar loves that. That's the innocence of Oscar that I love about that. Oscar loves the goofy laugh and the Donald Duck sneeze. By the way, bring your kids around. If you've never heard the Donald Duck sneeze that they want to look at, all right, you, little Johnny, okay?
There he is.
Here's the imaginary pepper. Now throw the imaginary pepper in my
Oscar.
Face. Okay, here we go. Oscar's making me laugh. I'm sorry. And then I get the like when they go from that to when they do the you know
full belly laugh.
God, good time. But so I'm hoping that in these times I'll be kind of zipping right through, that we won't have the normal, you guys would know better than me. Traffic's diminished.
Traffic was non-existent in D.C. this morning.
Yeah, so remember, Mike, there's no school, like the school buses, parents taking kids to school, drop-offs. Then you've got, I would say, a good, even from downtown's building, because I always ask the security guard, I'm like, people coming back? He goes, no, honey. It's a ghost town. And I said,
I'm thinking as you're saying that, that I get in the car because I've been in Maine this long. I get in the car, and then the first major city, I guess, would be probably Boston. But I won't be driving through Boston.
Okay.
So the first city would be New York.
New York.
And I see New York, and it's like, I am legend.
You say that. Did you see this morning that yesterday two guys were racing go-karts around Manhattan dressed as Mario and Luigi, like in Mario Kart? And the streets were open enough that they were able to do it. So you might actually get quite lucky. And Pony, make sure you stay home tomorrow to make traffic.
No. Can I just quick sidebar with Pony Boy?
Yes, please.
So Pony Boy and I had a nice heart to heart, one of our quarterly heart to hearts.
I asked him,
you didn't even know this. I asked him to do something for me yesterday. So I hope you weren't all over him because he might have felt really put upon.
No. He shouldn't be. Pony has been hit or miss from home, not as efficient as he should be. So it finally came to a head. I said, look, man, for the better of your professional development and our friendship and relationship, you need to start coming in so I can check your work. And yesterday was the first day, so he has to come in from 9 to 5 like an adult. And mind you, he used to leave at 2 before, but I said, now you gotta
stay till 5. How was the first day? How was it?
So Pony, when I got in, I said, hey, where are you? Like, I text him, hey, where are you? Because I didn't see his car in the garage or anything. And he said, oh, I'm coming in at 3 today. Because he said, come in at 3. And I said, we have all the best for the George and Barbara Bush Foundation at 3. Make sure you're on hand in case something is up with the technicals. He conjured himself into, I have to be there by 3 on a work day, on the second work day that I asked him, hey, you got to come in from 9 to 5.
Is Pony available right now?
No, Pony's driving into work because I said, get your ass in the car. It's 9
so
to
Pony
5.
Was gonna, so this is the second day.
This is the second day, Mike. The second day.
Pony.
But he will be there at 3. Where? He'll be there at 3. I promise you that.
Why would I have him come in at 3? That makes no sense.
Ooh. Be there exactly at the time I hit record. I want you there for the beginning of the session.
All I did was ask him to make me a new card. That's all.
That's not a problem, and he can do that on this time, Mike.
It was a terrible effort, to be perfectly honest.
Mike, send that
did
work
he send
to
you
us.
A proof?
Send that work to us. We will take care of that.
I want it real simple.
Yeah.
And I wanted it to be a new thing. I don't need a phone number on the card anymore.
Right.
I just want to show. I want to give people somebody with my name on it on maybe the back, and then the show stuff. And
Mike, it would be our pleasure here at Podcast Village to design you a card. That is garbage. That is not going to work. That is not going to work.
That's what he gave me.
Pony doesn't have that skill set.
How about this card?
Give it to us. Give it to us.
You are aces. All right. Well, listen, turnabout is fair play.
Yes.
We covered the Democratic National Convention.
Oh, boy.
We have to cover the other one, too, the Republican National Convention. Only a couple of things, and they both involve the same couple. That I want to talk about when we come back on the Mike O'Mara Show.
Greetings, friends. It's your kids' teacher here. Remember back in March when you discovered what teachers deal with every day? Remember how grateful you were? Thanks for that. We miss them. We want to teach them. We just don't want them to kill us.
Right.
So let's stay home for now. And after a long day of virtual learning, get yourself an egg salad sandwich and enjoy the Mike O'Mara Show. Oh, and buy your kids a TMOS t-shirt so they don't show up to Zoom class in their pajamas.
Yeah.
Class dismissed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome back.
The same couple, Mike. The same couple.
Welcome back.
America's it couple.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. Do you ever wonder how much you could save in just 1 year by switching to Harry's? You could save enough to buy 26 fancy cups of coffee in New York City and a croissant.
Oh,
so many delicious flaky liars. How you ask?
I did not anticipate that read.
We were so serious at the beginning of the show, I have to get it out right now.
I understand.
It's not my... Harry's. They deliver high-quality razor blades for as low as $2 each, a fraction of the price of the leading brand, but even more importantly than that, incredible savings. The shavings. Harry's gives me by far the best shave of my life. It's fantastic. You're going to love it. Blade refills delivered directly to your home. 1% of proceeds are set aside for nonprofits devoted to helping provide access to better health care for men and veterans. Our listeners can redeem their Harry's trial set. You get a trial set when you start with Harry's at harrys.com/TMOS. You will get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip. That's what you put your razor in. 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel, which is the best with aloe to keep your skin hydrated. And a travel blade cover to protect your razor. Go to harrys.com/TMOS to start shaving better today. Yeah, I mean, people asked me, they said, are you going to watch, even though you play on one side, are you going to watch the other side? Said, of course I'm going to watch the other side. I'm going to watch the other side, and I was asking my wife when we were in the car yesterday, do you think we're going to get A, comedy material, B, kind of a bland but competent showing, or C, will they hit it out of the park? And my brother-in-law said to me, I don't think it's going to be C.
No.
Right. He was right. But
a question for you, Mike, before we proceed. We all know where we all sort of line up politically. But because of that, do you find the RNC almost a little more fascinating because it's a look at a world that you don't necessarily relate to?
I do, as far as I know, because I watch all the networks and I try to pay attention and read as much as I can about it. I know what they're going to say. You know, you don't know exactly what they're going to say. You don't know what they're going to come out with. But I watch. I have to be completely honest here. I'm watching for the gaffe. I'm watching for the moment where they might have. And I thought from a production standpoint, our boy Oscar Santana was spot on.
Called it.
Same
absolutely
people,
called it.
Professionals putting it together. Not no big vast glitches.
Except for the hiring of John Voight.
I do concede, Mike, that I felt like you were right yesterday while I was watching, because there was not the level of polish.
No, there was not, and
moving parts.
Right.
That I expected after seeing what the DNC, did. Where I was like,
right, right. I
mean, Mike was right. Where they had this camera pan, like even those soft pans that come from a jib coming in to Julia Louis-Dreyfus or the host for DNC on set, like all of that was at a higher. I guess the production level I felt was at a higher level than the podium and the prepared pieces.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But overall, as far as...
So beautiful,
as
technically. Lacking
any technical glitches. Yeah. Now, I'm not a political hack, and I do not put conventions on. I would think that one of the prime directives, no matter what you're saying at that podium, would be, you don't want to scare anybody.
Oh, no!
You don't want to frighten. What you want to do is you want to inspire. And what I'm talking about with these conventions, when I watch all these talking heads, they are talking about there's a certain percentage of the audience out there that is your base, that they want the red meat, but then you're not talking to them exclusively. What you're doing is you got that week to address America. And everything was humming along, that you can disagree with people, you cannot disagree with people. You can hear their stories. Until we got to Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend, Kimberly Guilfoyle, who it's really difficult to explain
if you've watched The Hunger Games.
I have two clips that I like to play.
You'll understand what we're talking about.
Upon rewatching it today,
scary.
It reminded me of, you know, when sometimes in the audio vault I play like a really great singer, but I've isolated the vocals so there's no music behind it. And it's like, it seems like they're over singing. She was over talking for the room because it's an empty room.
Before you dive in, let me set it up a little bit more. So Kimberly Guilfoyle is giving the red meat, and she's giving the red meat that, Democrats are going to destroy the country. They're going to do this. They're going to do it. It's not a question that's said by lots of other people. Mm-hmm. You hear that all the time. That's the way we say that he's the worst, that it's the future of the country. Mm-hmm. That's what both sides do. There's a way to go about that without I still believe that when you're on the Democratic side, you have to aim your commentary, make it soft enough that it doesn't totally turn off and frighten the other team.
Right.
And they have to do that so it doesn't totally frighten me. I looked at Kimberly Guilfoyle and I played a little playlet in my head that if this woman was going house to house with like a 45 in her hand. She's like, yep, he's a Democrat. Boom, there you go. That's the way I did. She scared the crap out of me. Now let's listen to the tone of Ms. Guilfoyle.
This is just from dead center of the speech, almost a randomly selected cut to give you a flavor of her speaking style.
In President Trump's America, we light things up. We don't dim them down. We build things up. We don't burn them down. We kneel in prayer and we stand for our flag.
So she goes on the speech with 6 minutes and 20 seconds.
I will kill you. No, worse, I will bite you with these giant teeth.
And 20 seconds, and it all ended this way.
You can achieve your American dream. You can be that shining example to the world.
That's nice. Yep.
Manifest and be the change in this country that you dream, that you hope, that you believe in. Stand for an American president who is fearless, who believes in you, and who loves this country and will fight for her.
Yeesh.
President Trump is the leader who will rebuild the promise of America and ensure that every citizen can realize their American dream. Ladies and gentlemen, leaders and fighters for freedom and liberty and the American dream, the best is yet to come.
She was saying good stuff.
My wonderful.
She didn't need to say it like that.
My wonderful wife walked in. She goes, "What are you watching?" I said, "The RNC." And she said, "Man, who is that?" And I said, "Oh, that's Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend. She used to be on Fox, if I'm not mistaken."
Yeah. And she was married to the governor of California,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So she said...
Or girlfriend.
I'm she sure said, "Man," I was like, "She doesn't have to yell, and she's too old to have a center part." And a center part for those...
Oh, for the hair.
Yes. And then she walked...
Hit the alarm.
She walked, the sides of the she alarm. Walked right out, and I was like... That's my peach.
You know what? That one comment alone makes her more qualified to sit on the panel than Wolf Blitzer for analysis. I would have loved to have someone say that last
Wolf,
night.
Well, Wolf keeps it steady. Wolf doesn't react. He leaves it to other people to react. The teeth were, and then, and this is the last I'll say on it, following her, right? She was followed by her boyfriend, Donald Jr., and I was out of the room. And I come into the room, I'm downstairs. Carla, we're so lazy. We don't do the stairs. We actually call each other. And I had flipped over to Turner Classic Movies because they were running a Jimmy Cagney prison movie.
I saw some of it.
And I kind of got caught up with it. And then Carla says, "Are you watching this?" That's when I jump. I go, "Oh, shoot. Wait, no, I wasn't. I was being a bad political junkie." And all she said was, "What's the deal with his with his eyes?"
I know.
And so that's the speculation. Donald Trump Jr., I got the impression that he was medicated because of an allergy attack. But his eyes, I've heard everything from weed to blow.
I
don't have enough or any, I would say, experience with blow to know what cocaine eyes look like.
I've never, ever, and this is the God's honest truth, on my son's life, I have never done coke. Ever in my life. I was afraid of it because I thought it would make you confident and make you want to be awake, and I did a morning show, so it scared the crap out of me. But coke eyes, to me, were always very wide, very white, and very, I just wasn't. Now, I'm not an expert, so I don't know, but a lot of people are saying that red. I don't know. What is there any more information out there?
I think he's allergic to his beard because I was really studying it last night, and I think it might have been made of steel wool.
I know you were obsessed with the beard that he had, his little salt and pepper beard. Obsessed with his eyes.
Gets the mixed metaphor of the night. This is my favorite moment from all the speeches last night.
Joe Biden is basically the Loch Ness Monster of the swamp. For the past half century, he's been lurking around in there. He sticks his head up every now and then to run for president. Then he disappears and doesn't do much in between.
The Loch Ness Monster did not live in a swamp. I'm sorry. Wow. He lives in a lake. So, that's why he's allowed to swim.
But, I mean, I expected it might get worse. So it would be like, Joe Biden is really the Loch Ness Monster of the swamp. That's just gonna have, but his eyes, no clarity on it, huh? At least give a spin. Come out of the convention with something. Let us know why his eyes were beet red, completely bloodshot,
and oozing.
And
what is?
Oh my God! I never even considered pink eye.
So now in both eyes.
Conjunctivitis. It looked like it might be
but
both
there
eyes.
But there was a glimmer of. Someone said Vaseline or something that at every eye point there was.
Yeah, there was something there. And you know what? That Vaseline might have worked at a 480 progressive scan. But when you're high def, you can't put Vaseline on your eyes.
So it's almost show emotion, right? So I said to Shannon, I said, maybe there's some sort of TV trick gone wrong and it's irritating his eyes. But he wasn't blinking that much, like it was burning.
Yeah, that's he wasn't doing that. And he certainly didn't rub them. But we got another night tonight. And
yet to come.
That will be in my machine maybe forever.
Who is that? Frank Sinatra?
Carlos, my sister yesterday was asking me about my wife has her 40th birthday coming up in early September. And so my sister was asking me, says, so do you have any big plans? And I simply, walking out the door, I said,
the best is yet to come.
That's what we said. That's good. That's our highlight reel, and who knows what.
Can't wait for tonight.
That's I was scared. I was actually scared, but I'm a wimp. We're gonna take a break, and we will come back with more fun and more thrills on the Mike O'Barry Show.
This is Zing Wants Candy. Well, we should have something sweet.
She loves candy.
Airheads, they're sour. Sour Patch. The watermelon flavored ones.
Sweet Tarts.
Nerds. Black Licorice.
Shannon.
Good and Plenty. Chocolate.
A Hershey bar.
Peanut butter cup.
Mary Jane's.
Watermelon. I ate all of my favorite candies.
Don't worry, Peach. You can stock up on all your favorites through the Mike O'Mara Shopping Center. Click the banner at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Thanks, Peach.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show, brought to you by Liquid IV. You all probably know Liquid IV for their popular hydration drink mix, but they have just launched their newest line, Energy Multiplier. With roughly 100 milligrams of clean caffeine, it is the perfect coffee replacement and an all-natural alternative to processed energy drinks for a sustained energy boost throughout the day. Here's a fact: half of Americans report that they struggle with daily fatigue. If you suffer from decreased focus, lack of motivation, poor mood, and unhappiness, grab some Liquid IV Energy Multiplier. Upgrade your vibe and reach your constant state of awesome. It's convenient, and I love it.
Liquid this is IV. Lemon ginger, Mike. It's lemon ginger. And Oscar, today, less ice.
Less ice, thank you.
Yes, not
at all. Was he making a racket with his ice?
Yeah. You noticed that, right? I said, hey, man, can you, do you know that you're going quack, 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 quack every time you take a drink?
Yep. Liquid IV available nationwide at Costco and Target, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use that great code TMOS. Please do. That's 25% off anything you order when you use promo code TMOS at liquidiv.com. So start fueling your adventures today at liquidiv.com, promo code TMOS. All right, let me see. I knew we would be up against
it today.
There's
a lot going on.
Yeah.
Well, there's some generic stuff that can wait. I'm looking at my little sheet here. Mm-hmm. Let me see. That's that. No. Oh, boy. I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about?
Oh, I if I could, just briefly.
Yeah, just brief.
I know.
We didn't even do our regular thing.
But I derailed you when you were talking with Pony Gate, when you were talking about coming down. Prepare yourself for New York. And this is a good sign, people, because New York has a low COVID rate and they're getting back to work.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City, you will hit traffic coming back down. You will. And then you'll curse the city, as I did. And then you're like, oh, my God, is it going to be like this all the way home? You will find relief on the Jersey Turnpike as it is.
As people always do,
well,
Mike.
What you're telling me maybe indicates that I will go to Ponzi. The Tappan Zee, as opposed to George Washington.
Don't do that. Don't do that. No.
Don't do GW.
Don't
Bridge.
Do GW. It's a nightmare.
When did you come through?
I came. This is
2 weeks ago.
You came through on a Sunday.
Sunday late night. I didn't get home till 3 a.m.
So you were coming through at about like 10:00
at night, and it was jammed like New York City's usually jammed.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are apps for that,
and I've gone up. When I went up, Mike, I hit New York around 10 a.m., New York City traffic. And I said, this is good for the economy, terrible for any type of road trip.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing all you guys and coming down there. And really, my number one thing, it's great to see Oscar. I haven't seen him in a while. Rob will be communicating with from Leesburg. I really look forward to the time where we can all get back together. But
oh
I truly look forward to bringing Michael into everything you guys have built there with podcasts.
Oh, he's going to love it. It's like a spaceship.
He's going to be so
proud. It's like
a
spaceship when he sees it. Yeah, it's so cool.
You know, the thing up here is that we are going to be renting our place up here, so we are actually going crazy.
And thank you, Mike, for allowing my family to go up there.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Personalizing it. I shouldn't have said that, but I did. If Todd can post it, I can say it. That's it.
What do you mean? What I missed?
I feel like, oh, my God, what have I done? I feel like Alec Guinness in Bridge Over the River Kwai after what I just said.
What did I miss?
What have I done? You know, it's... Todd posted that he's... renting, he wants to rent his place in Arlington.
Oh, yeah. I thought I knew that forever.
It was not another boat parade. Donald Bryan's putting his boat
parade. When you mute
up there.
Your friend through an election cycle,
yeah, you don't see it.
You don't see it, so I get my information secondhand.
Well, you know how it is with his posts. There's never a doubt that
the best is yet to come.
I hope he's holding up okay.
It's the fire drill coming down. Carla is. Spectacular. This is where her youthful energy combined with her organizational skills work beautifully. And I will get off the air today and be told what to do. And she has told me specifically what to pack for the trip, what to pack for going down south, what to put in a closet, what to put away. I've done all my really big, heavy-duty work, moving big, big stuff and getting that. But it's still, when you're making a pivot, it's a little disconcerting.
I know it's last minute, but can I make a request? Sometimes when I'm on a rental property, there's one door that has a padlock on it. It's normally like a closet or something.
You know something, Rob? I knew you would go back to rental property. I knew you would, and I'm very uneasy. Let's not talk about it.
All right, please, for the love of God!
Can I share a little bit more? Because my sister and brother, their Cape house, they have rented it here and there. Yes. And it's, look, it's smart. If there's any way that you can create an income property out of a property you use you don't use year round, that's smart.
Do it.
It's just good business. Mm-hmm. They have a Foot Locker, well, maybe more of a stand up locker with the combination lock. And you know what it has in there?
What?
Emergency toiletry, just in case somebody shows up and they're like, we can't, everything's shut down.
Right.
All the booze that's left over that I bring and they never drink.
But it's not for the people that are renting.
No, it's, no, but it's for.
Excuse me, just a second, will you?
Of course.
Frankie, shut up! So they have a personal one and they have a renter's one. In case
a rental lock, a renter is like an emergency thing
for tools, and so unless something goes sideways, they need to fix
cyanide
something,
tablets,
anything like that.
Got a lady for that.
You got a lady. Good.
You're all set.
I love it. I love it. Oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot my. God bless my brother and sister-in-law. They're cheap, so they refuse.
They're cheap, so they're not there. They don't want to give up the percentage. Yeah. I'm paying the 10%. Okay. Yeah. There you go. No, thank you.
Oscar, you just be glad you don't live up there.
Getting the call. Yeah.
Oh, I'd if you're not up there, you'd be that guy.
Our handyman, younger brother's going to be over.
I used to get a call when I rented my place in Florida. I would get a call, and this lady's tone was always like this. First words,
hi, Mike.
Oh, no.
Your tenants are complaining that they don't have heat. We've gotten a bit of a cold snap and they wanted to turn. I'm going to send my husband down to check it for you.
Well, you could have probably sent him over without calling.
Yeah,
him.
Don't even know.
Because he wanted to get the whole death and destroy. So you know what happened? He went over and he put it on heat.
And it worked.
Jesus,
Mike, it's good to know
that.
So many good people.
Yeah. I told that story to this other lady. Said, that's the call
Mike,
I don't want.
Then a quick sidebar, if we're talking about renting, the house in front of my house in Georgetown has been rented to students. And you're like, well, why are there students if it's all virtual?
Right.
And my neighbor, who I haven't talked to yet, he said, hey, I got some siblings moving in, like two sisters and a brother. They're all moving into the house. They're all Georgetown students.
Okay. Right?
And I like when youth is around. I don't like when, like,
sure, it's like St. Elmo's Fire. It's great.
Yes. And the first thing Shannon says, I see the neighbors moved in. I'm like, yeah. They were lifting weights in their garage playing Biggie and Tupac. And she said, like, full blast? I'm like, yeah. I was like, finally, some life in this neighborhood. And she said, were they wearing masks? I said, no chance.
Hey, college kids.
These kids do not give an F. They don't give an F.
What was the school that recently, that was it Ohio State?
Notre Dame,
Michigan.
But one of the schools just booted like 208 and said, get out of here. Yeah. Go home. You're out. That's what more schools ought to
if
do.
If you
get
can't
them out.
Follow the code of conduct, they're not going to have it in person.
Go, get out.
Baby. So life is fantastic.
The best is yet to come.
We will take a break and we will come back with news you may not need right here on the Mike O'Meara Show. And we'll do the mailbag on Thursday, Rob Spielberg.
All right, okay? You got it.
We'll do that. We'll be right back.
You asked and we listened. Now you can listen on Spotify. In our never-ending effort to make it easier for you to access our content, The Mike O'Meara Show can now be streamed on Spotify, just another platform that gives you full TMOS access. So go grab the show and listen and spread the word. The more you know, the more we grow. TMOS on Spotify. Grab it.
Welcome back to the Mike O'Meara Show, brought to you by the TMOS Patron Society. We still need your help. As you know, the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic are not limited to the disease. Many businesses have been crippled over the last few months, and when one business declines, others fall as well. It's a ripple effect. and we are not immune from it here at TMOS. We've managed to stay afloat, but this boat ride is far from over. We need you to go to MikeOMaraShow.com, click the Patron Society banner, and make a pledge to TMOS. The need is real, and everything helps. Any amount makes a difference, entirely up to you. If you're here for us, we'll be here for you. We appreciate you, and we thank you, everybody.
News!
All right, hold on a second.
Just relax, everybody.
How are they going to lose it? There it is. A lot of paper today. News. A lot of prep for this show. Tiny little 90-minute show. It takes 7 hours to prepare. All right, hold on just a second. All right, here we go.
News!
I'm a pro.
News.
Look it up. This past Sunday would have been Kobe Bryant's 42nd birthday, and yesterday was 824, the two numbers Kobe wore for the Lakers. That's now recognized as Kobe Bryant Day in Los Angeles and Orange County. The city of Los Angeles paid tribute by announcing that the street outside Staples Center would be renamed Kobe Bryant Boulevard. It's a portion of a road called Figueroa Street. Also, the Lakers wore special Black Mamba uniforms for Game 4 of their playoff series against the Portland Trail Blazers last night. So Kobe's still in people's thoughts, which I think is very cool.
I think a street naming is one of the greatest honors. I think that's it cool is. Because everyone Absolutely. Sees it all the time.
You've always wanted in Iowa City, to have Spiewak Acres. I know you have.
Rob Road.
Rob Road.
Two
B's. Rob Road.
That's right.
Rob Road. Texas and Louisiana have been bracing for double-barrel hurricanes this week. Luckily, Marco weekend before Polo. It hit. But Laura could be worse.
So, Mike, in your experience,
why don't you stop right there? You know what? Leave it to me. I can get myself in trouble.
I was just going to ask about you've dealt with a lot of hurricanes, and you know, if you had any tips for them.
Well, from what I saw, Laura is a bear. Like we don't know,
That's right.
she looks like it's not going to be good.
So how prepared are you for an emergency? A survey polled people in America's 25 biggest cities and found we're not as prepared as we could be. Here's what it found. You probably have enough food, but not enough water. 8 in 10 people have enough canned goods to last 3 days. Filling a bathtub is a nice alternative, too.
Yes.
Just in case you wanted to know that. We did that since I was a kid. 40% don't have 3 days worth of water. That's probably a good idea to hide that somewhere in your house. Only 16% have access to a generator. Well, of course. I mean, generators, what? Access to a generator or owning a generator? Generators are ridiculously expensive.
Let me ask a question about the tub thing. Is when we grew up, we actually had a well.
Excuse me.
So if there was a power outage, we lost running water. Would you use the tub water for flushing the toilet? That's what we would use it for.
Yeah, use it for flushing the toilet. Let me see. 81% would have no way to communicate if cell service went down. Well, that's probably me too. 26% have an agreed upon meetup place if the family gets separated. I don't have that. 47%. My plan, as I've told you before, is beat feet. I get out of there.
Yep.
I work from wherever I am. I just bring my equipment. That's what
your meeting place should be. Big Sandwich.
Big Sandwich. Yes, sir. That's what my cousin Teddy. My cousin Teddy bumps into me yesterday. He goes, we've seen each other now at the two fatty food places.
Oh no!
In Ellsworth, Maine. He said. We just cracked up. He said, did I see you at Big Sandwich yesterday? I said, yes. He just shakes his head. We just started laughing.
That's so great.
Fatty, fat. 47% of us don't have emergency evacuation kits or a go bag. I don't have those either. I'm sorry. I'm a bad Floridian with a 89% do think they'd be able to get their pets out in time if they had to evacuate. I'd be able to get one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. The most prepared cities overall are Houston, Miami, and Tampa, probably because of the Tampa deal. The least prepared, Rochester. How about Rochester? Our fans up in Rochester, New York.
Rochester.
Come on, people. Rochester. Yeah. San Antonio not prepared. Vegas, Chicago, and Phoenix not prepared for the eventual. Have a plan. Doesn't have to be that detailed. No. Have a plan.
Turn
know
around,
what you would do.
Don't drown.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't be a plan. Thrill seeker.
I have a hotel phone number marked on the map of where I would go if we were going to get like a Cat 4 or something like that.
Maybe really? We could you all meet to. Up there one day.
Yeah, that would be fun. Have a party like the guys that are lifting weights. Listen to Pac.
Exactly.
It's fantastic. Yeah,
it was so great because they're all in great shape. And I'm peering out like just this loser neighbor. I'm like, where's that music coming from? And they walk out and it's all like abs for days.
What's that racket?
And I'm like, these little Fs. They think they've got life on a string, right?
Yeah. The world on a string. Something I'd never see unless I did 8 hours a day. A study found down, the average American will go through, I know I've got this beat, $11,198 worth of toilet paper in their lifetime, which is just over $180 a year. Spending has almost doubled since the pandemic started, though. Well, that's because people are hoarding it.
Yes. Yeah.
Mrs. O'Mara. Because we're all stocked up and we use more while we're stuck at home. Here are three more quick stats from the survey. The average household goes through 159 rolls of toilet paper a year and 145 rolls of paper towels. That's about even. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Over the course of your life, you'll spend $10,519 on paper towels, $9,454 on tissues, and go through $9,403 worth of plastic bags and garbage bags. Bidets, we've been talking about them on this
yes.
show.
Yes, love them.
Are more popular than they used to be in the U.S., and 42% of people who don't have one say they consider it. So there's that.
How many people are just pissed because they can't steal from work anymore?
Yeah. Well, yeah, so you mean toilet paper, right?
I mean, clean supplies. How much printer paper is it like already still at in the little supply closet? Yeah, how many times?
I was fired from WJFK, yeah. I looked at Carrie. I said, now we have to buy printer ink.
KFC has suspended their advertising slogan, finger licking good, because they say it's not right to recommend people lick the. I didn't mean to hit that. Lick their fingers during the pandemic. You can understand.
I have stopped myself, especially after fries or any dipping sauce, from going like this, just like you would.
Yeah.
Right.
And it is a habit that's so hard to break.
Ingrained.
I hand sanitize before my fries come. Yeah.
Mike, have you heard the slogan that they're replacing finger licking good with at KFC? What's released?
Most folks have heard about it.
All right, that's good.
Good, very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice.
This is the good one. Zoom had a major outage yesterday morning, just as millions of kids were logging on to start the school year. Really glad that didn't happen today with Heather Morris. Really, really glad.
She was great.
It was restored around 1:10 p.m. Eastern. Around 100 nudists have tested positive for coronavirus at a famous nudist resort in France.
Yeah. Also finger licking good.
The result required people to wear masks indoors, even if they weren't wearing anything else, but apparently that wasn't enough protection. Do you think there's maybe a chance they could have gotten that through their pan? Could you get the virus through your pan?
The nudists, you know, I think of someone all naked except for a mask. It reminds me of our great time at the, was it Whitetail? No, that's a ski resort. I can't think of the name of the nudist colony.
Where's the nudist colony?
Oh, my God. It was near Whitetail. I'm trying to think.
Yeah,
it was something tail. Mm-hmm. It was.
But in
deer.
Any case, but I just remember
it might have been the Whitetail Nudist Resort. I think
maybe it was. Maybe it was.
I think it was the Whitetail.
They would run around and they'd be, you know, they didn't have masks then, but they'd be totally nude except for sneakers and a towel over their shoulder.
So gross.
The worst.
Anyway, as if I needed another reason not to exercise, doctors say if you do have coronavirus and you exercise, it can make your symptoms worse. Thank you.
Okay.
I can't believe we have to say this again, but don't drink bleach. The Poison Control Center in Dallas says they've had 46 cases of people drinking bleach so far this month. Jesus Christ, come on.
My teeth have never been whiter.
87% of Americans approve of stores requiring customers to wear masks, including more than three quarters of people in every political party. 86% of Americans think that if everyone wore masks in all public places, it would help reduce the coronavirus spread. Well, yes, it was, ladies and gentlemen.
Breaking news. Pony has arrived on campus.
Nice. Oh, well, it's time for my kicker, so tell him to shut up. Here we go. There's a 40-year-old woman named Nicole Dozois who lives with her 59-year-old father in a small house in Largo, Florida. Around 2 p.m. Oh, I'm sorry. Check that. 2 a.m.
Oh, 2 a.m.
On Sunday, she was upset that her dad would not stop passing gas.
Dad.
They got into a fight over his excessive flatulence. She wound up punching him in the face a bunch of times and scratching him on the neck, and then police were called. She was arrested for domestic battery. Her father had some swelling, some bruising, and a pulled finger. your own jokes.
Oh, that's good.
Don't like that. Your own jokes. We'll take a break.
Good
and
one.
Come back. Do that. We got Heather Morris, accomplished, and I'm doing a pull finger joke.
Quite a sandwich. Quite a sandwich.
We'll be right back with the audio ball right here. Shining up through my
shoes. Hello, my friends. This is Arnold Schwarzenegger. Haben Sie Uber about the coronavirus? Das ist crazy. So, I want to offer some advice because we need to protect senior citizens like your Großmutter und your Großvater, die Kinder, and each other. Hopefully we can flatten the curve in time for Christmas so we can celebrate around the Tannenbaum and enjoy the presents and eat the Schwarzwaldkirschtorte and things. To do this, we must social distance, which is hard. I have to eat my own schnitzel at home because the restaurants are closed and stuff. No one is allowed to pet my miniature horse. And I can't make love to my housekeeper if I am 6 feet away. Is Max teed me so angry? But you can protect yourself by shopping at the TMOS Shopping Center, at MikeOmeraShow.com, Target, and Walmart. Remember, we must obey the rules, and we can beat the corona, okay? Good. Es ist bad disease, but at least it's not a tumor. Dankeschön.
Thanks, Arnold. Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show.
It's Tuesday, Tuesday, take a snooze day, appreciatory cruise day, stop off on your booze day, lose your blues day, and choose your news day.
All right. Well, my dearies, you will definitely lose your blues if you choose this news. There will be a TMOS bonus show this Friday.
Yes!
Phone the neighbors, wake the kids, extra fun for your hungry ears. If you miss out, I wouldn't give your troubles to a monkey on a rock. On a rock, Oscar. On a rock.
On a rock.
On a rock.
So here's the news. For mere pennies, you get this week's show plus full unlimited access to every bonus episode of all time. Just click the banner at MikeOmeraShow.com and a subscription just might be your cure for your blood blister, you klutz. It's your passport to the assport. Mike O'Mara, I guarantee it. And now back to a very special all-nude episode of The Mothers-in-Law, already in progress. Let's open up the audio vault, and here he is, Rob Spiewak. Take it away, Rob.
Kay Ballard, it's been a long while, Mike, since we've had a quarantine, and I think you're going to love this one. This is, you like the Oak Ridge Boys, don't you?
Elvira.
Yes.
New virus.
New virus.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't prepared.
Inside us.
Oh no!
Jesus, stop it, please.
Giddy up, please. Ba-boom, ba-boom.
About to boo in the stupid. We are Americans.
Tomorrow, Mike, perhaps a parody record based on Bobby Sue.
Oh, my one of my favorite Oak Ridge Boys song. Bobby Sue. So, there's nothing we can do.
Sometimes you have to wonder if God is passing judgment on you occasionally. This actually happened at an outdoor wedding ceremony over the weekend. During the vows, the groom mentioned that 2020 had been a bad year thus far. We're going to hear the groom set it up here, and then you're going to hear tape from the actual wedding.
I don't know what to make of lightning striking a quarter mile away during our wedding vows. I take it as a good sign that we didn't get electrocuted.
Let's face it, 2020 has not been the best year.
Mother Nature did not like that.
Oh, no.
They later found out that a quarter mile away, lightning struck a tree at their outdoor ceremony. 2020 strikes again.
That is funny.
I was pleased to see last night David Spade back on TV filling in for Jimmy Kimmel.
Scientists have found live coronavirus up to 16 feet away from a patient. They say corona lingers so long, it's still making jokes about Tiger King.
That's terrifying, though. That is really scary.
That's really bad. Yeah. That is bad. But the thing that is so
wear
great
a mask.
Is, I love the fact that they're giving him a chance. I hope they're going to, when things get back in gear in Hollywood, they bring his show back. Because I miss that show. That
oh,
David
absolutely.
Spade show was great.
I mean, what an amazing mining for gold. We played clips from that show all the time.
All the time.
He's so GD funny.
Very funny. Now, I don't know if this is set up or not. It appears to be genuine. A complaining student was on a Zoom call for school, you know, new to the virtual school, but she wasn't muted. And the teacher heard her complaining and responded to her.
I'm on a Zoom call and the teacher is like, turn your camera on, just mute your mic. Just don't be in bed or in the bathroom or like in your kitchen. Where else am I supposed to go? I don't got like 18 bedrooms.
Okay,
I don't
got. Easy, easy now. You can be in your kitchen. I didn't say anything about not being in the kitchen. I just said you need to be in an appropriate place.
Oh my.
And I was just giving some examples.
God, I thought
you
I was.
You can be in your bedroom. I just mean don't be in bed under the blankets. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I don't got her. Like 18 bedrooms.
God, really? Come on, young lady.
Luckily, Mike, people are still finding times to be creative and playing The Flight of the Bumblebee. You know, have you ever taken a watering can like you would have for like your garden? You can almost play it like a trumpet. Because it's got the long neck.
Never had the pleasure, Rob. I've
you
never
can do it,
had
though.
The pleasure.
Because it's got the...
You lived in a more... You know, you were more of a farm boy than I was. I never did that.
Yes, I had to take the straw out of my mouth to do it, but you can do it. So here is how you play The Flight of the Bumblebee on a watering can.
One of those aluminum ones?
Yeah.
What's he blowing into end?
Yeah, I still don't know.
The spout.
So he unscrews the like watering spout.
Well, it's not a sprinkly thing. It's more like just like a spout, like you know,
like a trumpet would be.
Like gas. Okay.
Exactly. So you can play it, and that's what he did. But Mike, I close with this because this is important. Sometimes you get on the diving board for a pool and maybe you're a heavier guy and it's going to have a lot of give, but you always wonder, is it going to spring back? And it almost always does. I mean, I've gone off the diving board before. It goes way down, especially if you jump up and jump down. You bounce and you go in. Then there's the one time that the heavy guy does on the diving board and it breaks. And one more for the instant replay. And his supportive friends cheer him. That's your Magic Audio Vault. Have a great Tuesday, everybody. Safe travels, Mike.
On our
way
on
Thursday.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll see you Thursday, everybody. I appreciate that. That's it. We got to get out of here. Everybody, thanks for listening to another perfect episode of the Mike O'Mara Show. Required reading, and I mean it, man. I mean, if you want to read something, it's not Happy Happy. We don't always do Happy Happy, but the book is Silka's Journey by Heather Morris, and Heather has a new book coming out soon that's Stories of Hope. That has not been released to the United States yet, but boy, oh boy, what an honor it was to talk to this lady who put this amazing work together. Everybody, never forget. Read Silka's Journey. Read The Tattooist of Auschwitz. You won't regret that. I spent my summer reading those books. Don't forget, we're dying to hear from you. Messages for the weekly mailbag can be sent to Rob with two B's at MikeOMaraShow.com. Mailing address, P.O. Box 32101, Washington, D.C. 20007. And if you need assistance, just go out on Route 66 and flag Pony down. He'll help you out. And if you can't do that, it's Ponyboy at MikeOMaraShow.com. For Rob and Oscar, Mike O'Mara saying so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Ciao, ciao.
Before you go, please make a mental note. Today's show was made possible by the TMOS bonus packages. You can secure yours right now by going to MikeOMaraShow.com and clicking on the red bonus banner. Buy it or give it. Either way, you're helping out TMOS, and that's a good thing. Thank you, and go in peace.
Radio Entertainment.
Good morning!
Off you go.
Well, I don't get a brain, man, cold,
but they're...